listening to Osmoscope, the podcast that lets you dive into the marvelous world of olfaction.
In today's episode, I will be speaking with Daniel Sonnabend, London-based composer, music producer, and sound designer who connects the world of music with the universe of olfaction. If you'd like to know how Daniel translates scent into sound, or if you want to actually listen to the mesmerizing sounds of a floral chord or a bergamot, stay tuned. Daniel, you are a musician, composer, artist for film, amongst others, but you also are involved in art projects where you translate sense into sound. Tell me a little bit about what you're doing and how you got involved in this field of art.
Okay. So basically, about 2-3 years ago, my main work was working for films and TV and projects like that. And then at some point, I got a phone call, or an email probably it was, from a design studio called Jason Bruce Studio, which I've done some work with in the past. I was working with them on a project of a classical music concert at the foothills of the Himalaya, which also involved scent, but that was kind of... I didn't actually know a lot about scent back then. That was the first major scent project that we did. I was more involved in the music side of that, and then they called me for a second project, which was for Le Grand Musée de Parfums, and I suddenly get this email where they basically ask me, can you take 200 perfume ingredients and transfer them into sounds? And we started working on this for about, I think all together we worked on this for about 6 months in different stages, and we were working very closely with the IFF and the IFF, a couple of master perfumers, which were amazingly helpful. We were working with Anne Flipeau and Jean-Christophe Hérault. And yeah, after about one day where I spoke to them and we decided to work on the project together, the next day we were already off to Paris to meet the two perfumers and a few other people, the curator and everybody. And we started smelling perfume ingredients for the first time. I didn't know almost anything about perfuming before that point.
So what would this scent installation encompass?
The whole installation was a metaphorical audiovisual representation of the perfumer's organ. So the perfumer's organ is basically the palette of perfume ingredients that a perfumer would have and would use in order to create a scent. And it can range from a few dozens to a few hundreds in the big organs. It looks a bit like this secret laboratory, you know, with all these kind of shelves and tiny little sexy bottles. And the idea was to take one of these organs and to turn them into an art installation. So instead of perfume ingredients, you would have glass prisms that represent each ingredient. And each glass prism has a sound correlated to it. So each perfume ingredient has a sound that correlates to the ingredient. Then you have a centerpiece, which looks like this big flask, and a laser that comes from the centerpiece and hits the glass prism at the exact moment that the sound is being played, and modulates also to the sound. So the laser's intensity would be correlated to the sound intensity. And the effect is very mesmerizing, very hypnotic, you could say. And apart from that, I mean, so the trick was, yes, it's nice and all to make a sound for 200, I think it was less than that in the end, about 150 or something perfume ingredients. But the trick is that they also have to work as compositions in the end. So from about 150, 200, I don't remember exactly how many perfume ingredients, we created then five perfume compositions. It was Fougère, Eau de Cologne, Chypre, Oriental, and Floral. Each one with its own characteristic. And the whole effect is, I'm going to use a bit of an electronic music term, but it's all modular. So basically, one ingredient, the same way it is in perfumery, one ingredient has to work in various compositions. And that's really the tricky part. Apart from that, it was really well received. I think it won a few design awards, which it totally deserved, because the people, Jason Bruce Studio and the lead designer, Dagny Rivera, they were you know, absolute pleasure and absolute amazing people to work with. And I was just lucky to be a part of that team as the sound and music guy.
Initially, the task was to create approximately 200 sounds for 200 raw materials provided by IFF.
Mm-hmm.
So what was the process of creating the sounds and making sure that the compositions, as you said, work well? Or was that a criterion that they work well? Because like in music, you have atonality or friction and you have that in Perfume as well.
Totally.
What was the process like?
Well, I think, first of all, the process in the beginning is like building any language, you know, but this time it's a language that communicates scent and sounds. I think at the beginning, you just have to create criterias and categorize things and think, okay, this family of ingredients, what would that correlate in the music world? Or this family of sounds, what would that correlate in the perfume world? I mean, in the first few weeks of the project, I didn't even touch the piano or any instruments or nothing. It was just spreadsheets and, you know, and creating, just reading a lot about the ingredients and also smelling whatever I could put my hands on, because it took a while for the ingredients to arrive from Paris. But the moment they arrived, it was also like invaluable to smell this thing you've been reading so much about. Then when it comes to, yeah, atonality and things that are more dissonant or more consonant, atonal, I guess, is tricky to use that term, because some of the sounds are literally just sounds. They don't even have a tonality. Some of them are sound recordings that I've used, or some sounds that I've recorded, you can almost not tell what pitch they are in. But then if you look at the term of dissonant and consonant, the more dissonant thing you get, a lot of times it would be more outstanding out of the composition. But there are exceptions to that, like things that are more melodic. For example, I consider them to stand out a bit more. So if I want, for example, to create something, I don't know, something floral that is not necessarily, doesn't necessarily smell bad, but is just like jumps out of the composition, like, I don't know, like something like Ylang Ylang, which is very sweet, or tuberose, or these white flowers. So you can create something sometimes not necessarily more dissonant, but just more melodic to make it jump out, you know, in a way that is very distinctive. Dissonant things can also stand out quite well.
So when I asked you for a couple of samples, you suggested that we check out vetiver and frankincense because the scent is similar or has some similarity. So maybe we can listen to that and then you tell me
what we're
hearing.
The interesting thing that I found about them is that they're both very smoky types of wood. And there's something very distinctive about them. So maybe let's start with frankincense, with Olibanum. For the organ, and the volatility of the ingredient is related to the length of the sound. So if you think of the longest kind of bass notes, they would take a few days to wear off your clothes or your skin, and that was related to a minute and a half. So if you have something that is very long lasting, it would only be about a minute and a half tops, you know, in that.
Let's try vetiver. Let's try vetiver.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. darker. It's the same key though.
Yeah, right? True. It's definitely darker because it's a bit more bassy. Also, the smell has a bit more, not depth, but a bit heavier, you know, so that would make the sound darker. It's also more linear. You can tell also the similarities between the two. They're both the same. I think, if I remember right, they were played on the same instrument as well.
Did you play it on the bass with is this a synthesizer sound? Because the one is very wooden.
I think this one specifically is a bowed electric guitar, but then it was processed. I think with Vetiver I also had to pitch it down quite a lot to make it more bassy. That's why I guess bass guitar would be something that pops to mind. But no, it's all electric guitar, if I remember right. Should we listen to something else, or should we...
Yeah, with pleasure.
We heard some bass notes, so I guess we could go for something a bit more toppy. We can do bergamot. That was a short version of bergamot. Well, bergamot is one of the longer lasting citruses, but it's still, you know, it's still a citrus, so it's not going to last more than other middle and more bassy notes.
So in other words, we have the pitch, we have the quality of the tone, the melody. So when it comes to the volatility of the scent, that is also reflected in the length of the sound.
Yes, absolutely. 100%. That was, in a way, the more straightforward and simpler thing to do, but also one of the most important things to do, because it's just, not just, but a lot of it is just fading things out at the right time, volume-wise, and fading things in at the right time, because not all some bass notes, some musks start quite...
start subtle.
Exactly. So in a way, that's quite simple to do, like fade things out and in, but... It takes a few days to figure that out exactly. So what I did, basically, I had all the ingredients and I would take a smelling strip and I would put it inside the ingredients and I would write the date on it. I had like a little table or I don't know, a surface in my studio where I would leave all the smelling strips one next to the other. And I would check a few hours, a few days later, which one still is there and which one opened up and which one closed down. So I would check the volatility in real time and then I would adapt the sound to it.
Was there something that you had in mind initially that when you got your hands on the raw materials and then, of course, you are in a conversation with IFF and they give you a briefing, probably this is what we want. Was that one of the aspects that you had in mind right away?
Yeah, I mean, one of the more immediate things that relate sound to scent in my eyes is the whole top, middle, bass note thing. We even call it the same in music. I mean, treble, you can call it top or high end. Middle is middle and bass is bass. You just spell it differently, you know. So I think that's one of the more immediate connections. And because that has an effect on the volatility, then I'd say that was one of the first things that you think about as well. You know, you smell lemon and it disappears so quickly and you think to yourself, okay, so... Naturally, the sound needs to disappear very quickly. I have to say that was clear from the very beginning, but the emphasis on that was very much the crew, you know, around and working with the perfumer, like, you know, Anne Flippo, who just comes to the studio. She came to London and we had a day in the studio and, you know, she has all the scents in her head already, you know. So when she listens to Black Pepper, she just immediately goes, no, that needs to be shorter. That is just like a big burst and that's gone. So there was a lot of emphasis on that from Jason Bruce studio, from the project leader, and from IFF. But working with the perfumers is what really allowed us in a very little time to perfect the sounds to a very high level. But I think that was basically the perfecting of them. So the first step was just, as I said, me just sitting like a bit of a mad scientist about a month or a couple of weeks, I don't remember. After I started working on this, we came to the IFF for a second meeting, and it was quite fun because the first time we were there, they gave us perfume ingredients to smell and we needed to guess what the ingredient was. So they gave us things like musks and like citruses and things like that. And we had to tell them, what do we imagine? You know, what do we think that is? And we didn't do very well, like the design team, because we were all new to perfuming. But then the fun bit was that a couple of months or a couple of weeks, I don't remember, later, we came for a second meeting. And by then we had the list of ingredients and it was a meeting that was focused on sound. And then we're like, okay, so now reversing the roles. Now we're playing the game and you're going to have to guess which sound is which ingredient. We built a little studio, portable studio in the IFF offices, and everybody had headphones. And we just play a sound and we ask the perfumers, so what's this ingredient? And it was really great because they guessed pretty much all of the ingredients very quickly. That was an amazing, I mean, the list changed quite a lot of times and we changed the ingredients that were in the end chosen for the installation, but it was a great starting point. And from that moment, you just have to perfect things and change a little bit, but at least we had the language sorted.
And since you mentioned language, so you created a sound language to raw materials, which from what I understand is a coherent, consistent system, which is a huge intellectual effort and accomplishment. How many percent is brains and how many percent can be attributed to associations?
I think that in perfuming, there's a lot of chemistry involved and there's molecules and all the ingredients have this kind of really intellectual and scientific names. But it's also, you know, a bit like a playground, right? So it's like 50% very intellectual, but then 50% like this little boy mixing, I don't know, Coke with water and checking what's going to happen, or something like that. So I would say it's around 50-50. I mean, obviously, you can't really measure that sort of thing. But there was definitely a lot of work that was more cerebral and more like genuinely thinking, okay, this specific ingredient is a molecule that exists in that ingredient. So I'll take a part of the more complex, bigger ingredient and I'll extract that to create something else. Or each molecule will be a certain sound. And then when I combine those sounds, I have the more wholesome ingredient. You have that, for example, with the jasmine and the ingredients that exist inside jasmine. So you have things like a benzyl acetate, which is part of jasmine. So you have that as an raw ingredient, and you also have jasmine as an ingredient. So that would be stuff that are more intellectual. But then, you know, I think that too much intellectual ruins the fun of it and ruins the kind of more passionate creative side of it. So yeah, there are moments, there were definitely moments that I was letting loose a little bit and going like, okay, so maybe this is not scientifically, analytically, perfectly it, but it feels right. You know, when you smell it and when we hear it, it feels like one entity. It doesn't feel like there's a wall between the two. It feels like one thing. So you need to be, you know, you need to be compassionate towards yourself, right? You need to be, you can't be too hard on yourself, you know, and beat yourself up. You need to have a bit of fun as well, you know. So 50-50, probably.
Can we listen to a composition and maybe the...
Yeah, sure.
The parts that contribute to that composition?
Right, yeah. So we had five compositions for this installation I mentioned, and they're actually all online. So I released them as sort of EP. So you can hear them on Spotify and everything. So which one should we choose? What do you fancy?
Let's start with the floral one.
Sure. So the floral one is a fairly complex floral composition, but it's still very light and very feminine. So it's complex, but not too heavy.
Thank you.
Now would be like about a few hours after you wore the scent. You know, this is the heart of the perfume. When you're already out in the night and you can smell the perfume, but it's not the first moment, the first sniff. This is kind of the decaying of the things. And now it's actually already the end of the day when you're kind of just smelling the last bits of the perfume on your sweater, I guess. That's like the end, the very, very dying out of... you know how you when you wear a sweater and like about 2 days later you can still smell the musky kind of notes on it if you didn't wash it? So that would be like the very end of the composition. That would be like 3 days later or something.
So what is in there?
What is in there? Let me see. Quite a few fruity notes, actually. We had allyleptanoat, which is a pineapple-y kind of one. We had apologies, by the way, to any perfume experts for pronouncing wrong these lovely ingredients, because I've read all of these names, but I haven't talked to people about all of them. Dimethyl sulfide, that's, I think, if I remember right, that's a lychee kind of thing. You have Veradox, which is more apple-y, ethyl acetate, oxan, so that's all fruity ones.
Is there something, another sample that you would like to share with us that we should listen to, in your opinion?
Sure, you can listen to something actually that was in this composition, the floral one. Something synthetic, maybe. We haven't done synthetic yet. We were laughing about it before. We both don't know how to pronounce this thing.
Oh yeah, AAG?
AAG, right. Yeah, allylamyl glycolate.
Which smells a little bit like pineapple.
Yeah, it's very pineapple-y and very green. It's like a lot of fruit ingredients, it's a synthetic ingredient. It's not made out of the actual fruit. It's been engineered to smell like it. There's something fairly complex about it. There's something synthetic about it, but there's something organic about how it's meant to smell. So you can hear there's some sounds in there that sound a bit more like real instruments, but also some that are obviously synthesized. And
This sound clip is incorporated in the other sound composition?
Yeah.
The floral sound composition?
Yeah, if I remember right, yeah, it was there as a part, as one of the fruit ones. I think it was in quite low concentration in that one. So obviously you make the same way that you mix a perfume, that's how you mix the sound composition. So some ingredients you put more of in volumes and some of them you put less. AAG specifically, I find it quite interesting because it's also quite short lasting compared to the others. So you can tell that the sound also disappeared fairly quickly.
So that was the most extensive work of yours with, you know, combining sounds and scents, or scents and sounds. You do other projects in that field, in that realm.
After doing a project like that, you don't stop there, right? Yeah, I think once you create such an organ and you know, and this kind of communication between scent and sound, you know, you... well, first of all, you become a scent addict. As we all know, these types of people exist. That's why we're having this conversation. And secondly, I think a lot of people were really taken by this work, and it led to another installation fairly quickly after that I was doing for Cartier, which was their first OSNI, which is a... Pardon my French, objet sentant non-identifié.
Okay, non-identified scent objects.
Exactly, yeah, non-identified scent objects. It was the first one of a series that they're doing now. Long story short, it was a cloud of fragrance. This fragrance is called L'Envol, which means the flight. It's a men's fragrance by Cartier. So it was a cloud of perfume inside a huge glass cube just outside the Palais de Tokyo.
In Paris?
In Paris, Museum of Modern Art, just there outside. The project was led by Mathilde Laurent, which is the in-house perfumer of Cartier and one of the more amazing person that I've met in the industry. More amazing people. In collaboration with a German climate engineer is a company called Transolar. That was a really fun one to do as well. It's a very interesting way to work on fragrance because it was quite different to the organ in the way we thought about the music and we conceptualized the music. It was much more about the concept of the perfume and therefore the composition. In this case, L'Envol means the flight, so you think about elevation, and also the concept for the perfume was ambrosia, which is the nectar of the gods. That was Mathilde's inspiration for the perfume. So the focus was a lot more on that, on the concept of elevation and going up and, you know, feeling like you're in the clouds, than about the individual ingredients. The bottom line was that we tried to create just constant elevation of sounds. So the sounds were just constantly going upwards, both in pitch and in frequency, which is the obvious way to do it in music. But also the fun thing was to create a sound mix and a speaker setup that allows that as well. So we created a three-dimensional, you could say, speaker system. It was two levels of surround. The bottom line is that it can allow you to send sounds upwards. So usually we listen to stereo or surround, and we have right or left, or right, left, back, forward. This time you had right, left, forward, backwards, up and down. So if you have up and down, you can send things from down to up. And that's what we did, just as much as we could, constantly. So you're kind of always feeling like your body is moving upwards, or that was the aim, at least.
Although the ingredients were not the focal part of the work with Cartier, but it obviously plays a role.
Definitely.
Is there a connection in the methodology on how you approached this? Did you use the same or similar sounds to what you had developed before?
Yeah, it's always a great starting point. You know, as an artist, you never like really repeating yourself. But when you have an organ of, we ended up with 150, but I think there are about 200 or maybe a bit more sounds that were created. And when you have about 200 of those, it'll be silly not to have a listen to what the new perfume you're writing music for would sound like with those, right? So usually what I would do is the first, almost as an experiment, the first thing I would do, and you can do that fairly quickly, you just open this huge project with 400 or I don't remember how many channels, and just choose the ingredients of this fragrance and you check what it sounds like. And then once you know what it sounds like, in film music terms, we call it the tone of the film. I usually call it the sound world that you're in. You know, some films or some perfume compositions, for that matter, it can be more synthetic and maybe more organic. And this is two different worlds. So when you're working with the organ as a starting point, you know which world you're living in. And then what you choose to world can be more interpreted by the concept of the composition, as we did in Cartier.
What can scent bring to society, in your view?
I think there's something about scent that, and you can say the same about sound, it's less immediate than vision. It's an interesting one because it's very subjective, but at the same time, and that's what I try to prove with my, especially with the organ, but with most scent project, there's also something quite objective about it. But that's not quite objective, but there's something which is a collective subconscious, to use Jungian terms. There's something that is very collectively between all of us related in scent. I mean, when you smell a flower, regardless of if you like floral smells or not, it resonates with something in you. And I think that's something really interesting that it brings to society. It brings this kind of juxtaposition between, we all know what this is, but it's so subjective at the same time. You know, so we can all smell a carrot and know that it's a carrot, but some of us would immediately go, ugh, and some of us would immediately go, yum. And I think that's such an interesting starting point for art. Something that you can't really tell where to place it. That's why I like the term, again, it's not my term, it's Carl Jung. But yeah, that's why I like the term collective subconscious.
Tell me a scent that you consider underrated. It can be a perfume, it can be a smell. What should people pay more attention to?
Ooh, that's a good question. It's a difficult one as well. I'll tell you why I find it difficult, because I don't consider myself an expert in the perfuming world. I mean, I know to do what I do. I know how to smell something and maybe know a little bit about how it's made and turn that into sound, or take a concept and turn it into sound. But, you know, I'm saying about a scent that something is overrated and underrated, I think I wouldn't claim to know enough about the history of perfumes and what was used when and how much it was used to tell that. But saying that, there were a few ingredients that I got from the IFF that I really loved, and I mentioned their names to people and people have no idea what it is. Like Stimone is one. Again, this is very subjective, but personally, I absolutely love that smell. There's something, it's a new ingredient. I think that's maybe why it's quite underrated. It has this kind of darkness about it. It smells like white grass and fig at the same time, but it's not so sweet. It's quite peculiar, and I absolutely love it. I don't know why. It's quite an intense smell and very distinctive. I absolutely love it, you know.
Thank you so much, Daniel.
My pleasure.
Thank you for listening to Osmoscope today and for joining our conversation with Daniel Sonnabend. You can learn more about Daniel's work and projects at danielsonnabend.co.uk. If you like what you heard, please subscribe and spread the news, or follow us on Instagram.